is Max.
My name is Yuri Lowenthal.
This guy is Travis Sintel.
And you are awaited.
You Are Awaited, if you're just joining us, is a Mad Max Fury Road podcast where two grown men, Yuri Lowenthal and Travis Sintel, arguably grown men, physically half-grown men, have decided to spend an hour a week watching 4 minutes at a time of the film Mad Max and discussing it in great detail, with great enthusiasm and great affection.
Sometimes we have guests.
Often we have guests.
Today we have no guest other than the film itself.
The guest of our podcast is the film. Welcome, welcome, welcome.
Happy to have all.
You. Listen, Yuri, before we get started.
Yes.
I want to say a couple things to you.
Shoot.
I feel a little physically sick. Mm-hmm. Both sort of emotionally and physically.
Sure.
This is our first podcast since the election, mm-hmm. and the remarkable confluence of our world with the world of Mad Max, yeah. It feels inarguable and feels inevitable that we'll discuss at some point in some detail. The Twitter account Morton Donald feels prescient and relevant.
And not as funny.
Not as funny.
As it used to. That has nothing to do with the guy running it.
No. You're very funny, but also two on the nose.
Yeah.
Sometimes comedy needs a little distance in order to function. So, listeners, I hope I'm not alienating any of you, but I also sort of don't care if I am.
No.
I think my body's a little run down from this week, mm-hmm. And my I'm emotionally a little disjointed,
unhinged,
off kilter. Mm-hmm. Just want to put that out there at the top of the podcast.
That's okay. I share your feelings.
You know where I'm at?
I know where you're at.
For those of you that have been in a bubble or in a underground or
just actively avoiding it,
or if this is your only source of news that you get, I want to inform you that Donald Trump won the U.S. presidency, mm-hmm. preceded by, of course, Brexit in the U.K., mm-hmm. and a rash of right-wing authoritarian leaders mm-hmm. springing up around Europe. So right. That's where we're at in our world.
Yeah.
And we're watching a dystopian sci-fi movie that feels less dystopian.
About toxic masculinity and uh-huh. A huge gap between most of the people and a little bit of the people.
Yes, there is a there are too many. I mean, it almost feels like a separate episode. We have watched.
right.
Maybe that's one. Oh, I want to tell everyone this is the 45th episode of 45th.
Who would have thought?
We've done 45 weeks. That's a high five. 45 weeks of You Are Awaited, and we're going to do 52, and we have some ideas coming up. This is the last major content episode that we will ever do.
That's true, because the film at the end of these 4 minutes is almost
It has
over.
About 45 seconds to a minute and a half
to a minute and a half left before the credits hit.
Yeah, so we'll do another episode.
I'm going to try not to dwell on that.
No, but I want to acknowledge it going into this.
No, of course.
This is the last major content episode. The next episode will be going through the rest of the sort of shots and then also a little bit of...
Into the credits.
In the credits, a little bit of wrap-up, and we can talk about some of the top above-the-line credits.
Yes.
And then we'll, you know, the rest of the credits roll, not to disparage everyone who worked on the film. We were going to acknowledge and talk about all of that, but we'll probably have some guests on and sort of talk about other things whilst the credits have rolled.
Sure.
How are you?
I'm scared.
You have a son.
I have a son.
It's perfect in every way.
Perfect. Perfect in every way. I am frightened.
Yes.
I am angry.
Mm-hmm.
I am conflicted.
Mm-hmm.
All sorts of things. I have, I started by saying, all right, this couldn't possibly be as bad as I think it is. Let's see how he does, and let's reserve our judgment. And then all the hate motivated attacks have started, both physical and verbal,
uh-huh.
and have made, unfortunately we had a couple of people who made them up, and for a lot of people have invalidated the ones that are true.
Uh-huh.
It would be hard for me to say, okay, now we don't know, we weren't there, but I've already got so many people in my circle who
I have
who
personal
have felt
friends
it.
Who have been verbally harassed, mm-hmm. In two cases physically harassed. The only one public news story I know that's been retracted is a Muslim woman in mm-hmm. Louisiana. Mm-hmm. That's the one sort of one that's been proven to be fabricated. Mm-hmm. Everything else I've seen has been validated, except for like sort mm-hmm. of, you know, trollish mm-hmm. online comments and things.
Right. Right. So, and then with the appointment of Steve Bannon.
Holy shitballs.
That's, you know what, you had your moment with me to see where it was going to go, and it's, no.
Steve Bannon, for those Australian people, is a leader of Breitbart, and a self-professed alt-right news mm-hmm. news guy.
Mm-hmm. Anti-Semitic.
Anti-Semitic by his mm-hmm. wife's assertions and by his actions.
Yeah, but the titles of the things that he's...
Yeah, yeah, and alt-right, so you guys know, is basically a thinly veiled... racist organization in the U.S. That delights in trolling people and making people feel unsafe and unhappy. So that's who's going to be one of the key players in the Trump transition, which makes us all a little nervous, a lot nervous. Mm-hmm. And just yesterday, I know of at least six minority churches that were publicly defaced with swastikas, six in the U.S. Mm-hmm. That's the ones I saw.
Yeah.
So... could be some more coming. Anyway, dark times.
Dark times. We can always do something about it, and that's what I have decided to...
I like it.
...to pledge to, rather than seeing where it's going to go, and then by the time it's too late, telling my, grandkids that, I wish that I had done more at the time.
I love that. John Oliver did a nice piece on it with a list of all these organizations you can donate to. If you mm-hmm. do listen to us, consider donations to Planned Parenthood, ACLU.
ACLU is going to be a big...
They're gearing up for some good fights, which is great, because Supreme Court's going to be a little wonky in the years to come.
in a possible strange turn, this, I've been praying for more people to tweet at us and email at us, and nothing like talking politics than to get people stirred up on Twitter.
Yeah.
I foresee this is now the the episode that gets us attention unwanted and not.
Well, bring it. I'm quite happy. Yeah. Honestly, I'm not saying that to be inflammatory or combative or contentious. I'm saying it to say that I'm quite happy to engage with anyone who wants to engage in a respectful, fact-based manner. I'm quite happy.
Or partisan. I believe in not dividing in the way that we have been divided. I'm only calling out... hatred and racism, which I think is something that we should all be able to come together and say, regardless of our, our partisan values or how we feel about money or, that sort of thing, that there are certain things that are human basic things that we can't let happen.
Yeah, I agree with you. The two fights I've chosen to sort of engage my time with off and online have been fact-checking. Let's all agree on the same set of facts with which to discuss.
Yep.
And let's all publicly denounce hate crimes, because I feel like if you voted mm-hmm. for Trump, I don't think that assumes anything about you other than the fact that you have priorities that superseded some human decency priorities in terms of protecting the marginalized and innocent in our society. And if you voted for Trump, I think it's your responsibility to speak up publicly and say, hey, I voted for Trump for economic reasons, for personal reasons, because I was scared of Hillary, whatever your reason was. But I also publicly denounce these hate crimes because I know that my vote was a tacit support of those, and I want to distance myself from that. You do that, I got no beef with you, honestly. I got no beef.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
So... that had to address that, and has a tangential relationship to, or an overt relationship to the film that we're watching.
Yeah, the Venn diagram of fake world and real world is mm-hmm. Widening. It's being a widening Venn diagram, you guys.
Yeah,
I have to say, climate change.
In the freeze frame that we've got for today, which will be posted if there's any justice in the world before this episode comes out, is of the milkmaids releasing the water, and. When you freeze frame on it, just with the coloring and everything, it does those pipes and the water look it looks like a CGI blend right there.
It does
to me.
You're not wrong.
But
not a bad one though. I still stand by my polecat fire background as
the
worst
one.
Sort of composited. That's just the one. It's awesome.
Well, and the obvious, when the war rig wrecks and things come at the screen.
But that's just so cool. Here's where we start. Oh, I want to address one other thing as a lead into this.
Okay.
And we got some very reasonable feedback.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
Our podcast has become us recounting the 4 minutes. And I understand that feedback, and we've been aware of it and cautious of it. Also, it's just a way of us reminding each other what happened so we can discuss it if anything needs to be discussed.
Yeah.
It's not... we know you guys have seen the movie. We're not here to...
A thousand times.
Yeah, we're not here to repeat
way
the film
more
for
than
you.
We have, yeah.
We are here to help spur each other to any thoughts we may have had about that in terms of its holistic appeal in the film, or its sort of minutiae referential appeal to other things and other yeah. mythologies. So that's why we do that. It's more of a memory device for us to help
but
sort
I will
of work
worry,
through it.
Yeah, but I will worry less about whether I got something. That's for sure. I'm just, that's out the window.
Also, yeah, the movie's over, so, yeah. so fuck
right, right. Too late.
Okay, so this 4 minutes picks up at the end of our last sequence where Max is attending to Furiosa, and it does pick up with something I do want to talk about because it's always it nudged me a little bit. Mm-hmm. I know George Miller is a physician.
Yes.
And there is a throwaway sort of line that justifies this action. Mm-hmm. But where we pick up, Furiosa is on death's doorstep. She's looking bad.
Exsanguinating, even.
Ooh, Yuri.
That's...
It's very good.
Well, one of the Vivellini says that.
Oh, I didn't even understand it's, that.
That's where I thought you were going with this. With
well,
the
I was
going
to say that she says yeah. she's bleeding out. What, yeah. Is that the word she uses?
I think exsanguinating.
Love that.
I think, yeah.
Okay, beautiful.
Which is a fancy physician's term for bleeding out.
Bleeding out, yeah. My brain just translated to what I thought she must have said. But
right.
Exactly what I'm referencing, that right. she says, she's basically bleeding out. And so Max, in this beautiful, necessary circular metaphor of his blood has been drained to fuel the war machine. Mm-hmm. He's given his blood to Nux. Nux has sacrificed himself mm-hmm. for the good of the people. Max now gives his blood to Furiosa. There is, in the annals of mythology, the idea of bloodletting, bloodgiving, the blood of the lamb, all these metaphors that mm-hmm. we're used to subconsciously about the idea of blood mm-hmm. as sacrifice right. is loaded into this. So I want to acknowledge that, mm-hmm. that I understand the metaphor.
I love it.
It's gorgeous. Mm-hmm. I don't understand the physical thing that's happening here, really. Can you just put your blood into someone and they get better? Is that how blood transfusions work like this? I know blood transfusions are a thing.
Sure, sure. And I would have to, I would hope that because George Miller is a doctor, that this is a thing that if you had to do it, you it would work.
I have to assume that. It's gross and cool when he puts that little... It's a huge fucking big catheter thing he puts in her
arm. Yeah, that is a big itch. And I always have to wonder in moments like this in films.
Yeah.
Because they always do such a good job of making it look like they're... Did the actor just be like, you know...
Do
because it
sticky.
Is a because it is a thing, just stick... Or is that just, you know, easy CGI?
I feel like it's...
It's gotta be CG.
It feels practical to me, honestly, but I can't imagine...
It felt practical to me, too.
Yeah, but I can't imagine... Maybe it's just a cool, clever gaffe. Like, it's a cool... Clever, practical gaffe.
I think that it is because I can't imagine an actor, you know, because rarely do you get something like that on the first take.
Yeah.
I can't imagine an actor wanting to do that over and over.
Or if someone takes my blood, they don't get it on the first take either. It takes forever.
Yeah, same. So
I don't have tiny veins, you guys, before you start tweeting at us. I have strong masculine veins.
Strong masculine
incompetent.
Veins. Pumping with high octane crazy blood.
But it does, all it is to say, what happens is Max, I guess catheterizes is the wrong word.
I don't know. Yeah,
that's just for dicks and vaginas, right? Can you put a catheter into a blood vein?
You probably can.
Okay. Anyway,
But I think a catheter is something you leave in, as opposed to this is just a temporary.
So what's it called? Well, is it just when he drains his own blood, he puts a thing in his own arm.
Anyway, yeah, he connects it on his end.
Right.
And then he connects it on her end.
Right.
And he sort of holds it. You know, he's got the I don't know if the physics of how that. You know, if you're the higher.
Yeah, raise it up. Raise it up. He says.
Raise it up. So to make sure that it's going. In, so
into her.
Yeah. Regardless of whether that's a thing that would work, I think this, like you said, the circular metaphor, it needed to come back around, and it is simple and beautiful.
Also, the idea that he's someone who is all about himself and had his blood stolen from him at the top of the mm-hmm. film, that he's able to give it freely to someone here. It's beautiful. Mm-hmm.
He doesn't need to save her to survive.
No.
But everything comes full circle with the change for him going from just survive
gorgeous,
I will
man.
Give literally my lifeblood to you.
It's so good. I mean, it just works on so many damn levels that it just, it's necessary. And so I always do, admittedly, I always bump on this when mm-hmm. I watch the movie as
sure.
like, is that how that works?
Right.
But I am, more than anything I've ever bumped on the film, the necessity, metaphorical resonance, and beauty of this moment mm-hmm. overrides any of those concerns, honestly, to me.
And let's drill down on a little more. It's not at all a romantic thing. It's not at all I love you, and we need to be together, so, you know, I will save you. I mean, that would be sort of the classic, all, you know, mm-hmm. because I love you so much, I will give everything to save you. It's it's not that. I think it's because of a gift she's given him to be able to care about things again.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or maybe to help balance the scales even of the people that he couldn't save. He's like, here's somebody I can save.
We've seen the
nightmares that he has. You know.
Yeah. Also, it's the right thing to do. Like right. Which is a thing for Max that he doesn't always do. He doesn't usually do the right thing, and necessarily objectively morally.
Sure.
He doesn't seem interested in it. But here, it's all the things you said, and it's also, I think, the right thing to do morally. He's like, you know what? I know how to fix this. I have the ability physically to do this. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do everything I can to save this person. Mm-hmm. And deliciously, I would say, this scene cuts away before you see the results of his actions. We don't know.
Right.
We don't know if he's able to save her.
Right.
The film darkens and goes to black here before we can even acknowledge it or see what the efficacy of his actions were.
I love how the male-female relationships that we do get in this film are subverted, you know, from the normal, you know, even with Capable and Nux. Mm-hmm. You know, there's an innocence to that, and it's so much more than just a flirtation or a sexual thing or a, you know, it is so eye-opening for him and life-changing for him to have any kind of relationship like that isn't a brutal relationship with someone else or a relationship with a woman at all.
Yeah, learning to care about someone and then also wrapping up this journey for Max as someone who has successfully saved someone as opposed to letting someone he cares about die. Mm-hmm. So he won't be haunted by this. It's a way of it's a catharsis, but it's also a way of curing his you know, we're it's implied if he's able to save Furiosa here that maybe these flashbacks and haunting images will cease for him. Mm-hmm. That maybe he's cured himself of these things.
Right.
Which is great. I mean, that wraps up his particular arc, I think, in a nice way.
I love how during that whole sequence, too, the DAG is just like a little mouse next to him. You only ever see her head in frame.
So
you know?
Nicely framed.
She's sort of, she's there. She's like, what can I do? What can I do? But she's also panicking. And she
I love
those haunted eyes. I know.
I love her. She's so weird.
I know. I have reached out to her, I don't know whether it's her PR person.
I feel like you're teasing me when you say that.
Nope.
Because I feel like it's a little bit of a
talk. I chose a couple of different people that I thought would be really interesting if we could get them. And I have not reached out to Charlize's people or Tom's people.
Fair.
I mean, I could, but by the time it even gets around to them, it'll be probably, 6 months from now.
As rumors have grown, as people have known I'm doing this podcast, people who are connected to the film have reached out more to me and told me things about the making of the film. One of them we know. Mm-hmm. But from some firsthand sources who were in the cab, it was tense and a lot of shouting between some of our leads and a lot of mutual hatred, it sounds like.
Outstanding.
So there's that. And also, you probably know this, but I had not known it to this degree. The reason they ended up shooting in Namibia, have we discussed that on the podcast?
I thought we had. I thought I knew what it was. You go first, and if my version is different, then I will.
They had planned on shooting in Australia, and there was a once-in-a-lifetime rainstorm, and the area they were supposed to shoot in was covered in purple, beautiful flowers.
Yeah, not at all.
Is that what you had heard?
Yes.
Beautiful purple flowers, you guys. Not at all wasteland.
No.
There's something nice about that.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is, but it feels
but
nice.
But it's, yeah.
It feels hopeful. Feels like hope.
Feels like hope. Hope is a mistake,
you guys. We've learned that in America. and change.
We can never give that up.
God bless America. So that scene cuts away.
Right.
Anything else you want to say about that? Oh, I do want to say one other thing about that scene that's really beautiful. Is, again, here, we see the beautifully darkened, dirty, dusty faces of the Vavolini, that woman, as well as some of the other major characters, and the striking eyes that contrasts that the way this is shot just gives you so much humanity to these characters and these actors that they look so downtrodden and their faces are so dark it only makes their eyes and their humanity pop more. There's this like beautiful duality between who they are and what's happened to them that's just done visually through the eyes. Yeah. Bright eyes and a dirty face makes you feel something instinctively.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
This person's alive and bright and well and their body is not doing well.
Yeah.
So I love that.
And we're glossing over the whole moment of the
of course, the
revealing of his name.
Yeah, please.
Of him, which I've loved, and gets a certain amount of ridicule from a lot of people. A lot of the people who say, you know, it's weird hearing that Bane voice say that, or it's just a weird construction of phrase. It's an odd moment. And that's true. It is very odd and super awkward, but I think that is absolutely intentional. Mm-hmm. I love the idea that with this change in him and the way he has suddenly recovered his humanity, that he remembers his name again, almost. Like, even before, or it means something, or he's proud to say it out loud, as opposed to before when he believed that it was because of him all these people had died. He probably didn't even want to hear his name.
Oh, I love that. I hadn't thought about
that. Everybody
actually.
Else, you know, saying his name, the ghosts haunting him.
Yeah.
For him to be able to say it out loud again.
I hadn't thought about it that way. You're right. It's a reclamation of his person, or of his humanity, in a way. That's... I'll turn it off. I think that's a beautiful part of that I hadn't necessarily considered. Yeah, it's him reclaiming his humanity, but also it's a thing she'd asked him earlier that he just is like, doesn't matter. And now it matters. You know, he said, you know, basically, what's the difference? Who cares what my name is? And now he's like, oh, you know what? I do want to tell you. It does matter. It does matter that you know my name. It does matter that I tell you.
Right.
And I think Yuri has said this on previous episodes, but I think it bears repeating that it's stumbly and awkward, I think, because this is hard for this guy. Mm-hmm. This is a vulnerable moment. You know, his name is who he is. It's a vulnerable thing to share with someone. And also acknowledging that he was wrong to not tell her earlier, which is kind of implicit in this line. Mm-hmm. But him being vulnerable is not something this character really ever does.
Right.
And so this is a very vulnerable moment, and it's hard for him. He stumbles through it. So this acting choice I'm okay with. I know it gets flack.
Me too.
But
I
think it's cool.
I love it. I'm totally fine with it. There was a theory going around, I'm sure we mentioned it really early on, about that this Max is the feral kid from Road Warrior, and that, you know, in this moment, it's sort of like his name isn't Max, but he takes the mantle.
Right.
Now, we know that has been refuted by people on the inside. That is not a thing. In fact, you know, at the end of Road Warrior, you know, it's the feral kid grown up and, you know, telling the story and everything, so he couldn't be. But I've always liked that as an idea, you know, that he is. Because this Max is feral as an adult.
Yeah. I want to be feral. No one has ever described me
as feral.
I'd like that to happen. I mean, and I don't want them to just say it. I want them to mean it.
Okay. Because I was just about to say it.
I know. I saw you coming, but I know you didn't mean it because I'm not feral. But I want to get to the point where maybe if I work out more and like get some like, in me.
Then you could be feral?
Yeah. Feels like, I mean, increasingly the next 4 years, I think I'll need some feral blood in me to, like, fight back or something. But, I would love to be feral one day.
Okay, well, we'll work on that.
Okay. Together?
Maybe. Sure.
Okay.
We got to do something to stay together after this podcast.
We're going
to
work on Travis being feral. We'll do one episode a year. Check back. Keep us in your feed. And we'll report back on Travis's approach to ferality.
The feral files.
The feral files
with
Yuri Travis
and Travis. And Yuri Travis.
And Yuri Travis.
And Yuri, so it's with Travis and Tell and Yuri and Travis.
I love it.
Okay. So great. So that's the end of that moment. And beautifully scored, as usual, with that.
Yeah. Good, and subtle and emotional music.
And back to, you know, now it's hard, after we met with Mark Mangini, it's hard for me to ever not be paying attention now to the, in a good way, to things that accentuate moments. And it seems like they really pulled out so much of the sound effects for this, so that this could be a very intimate moment where that you'd be able to hear the emotions in the dialogue. And
yeah, it feels intimate. You're right. It's
just like a little
feel.
There's a little noise just to imply that the vehicle is moving.
Yeah.
But there's no engine noise. There's no. It could be so much other stuff.
You're right. Oh, you're right. No, you're right. The effect of that is intimacy. So. No, well
and
done.
I think they bring back the strings, and the Furiosa theme from when she goes out to the desert. Playing, I was replaying that in my head. I think that's the.
That's because you listen to this soundtrack when you work out
and when
get
I drive.
Feral.
And when I drive,
you should listen to it while you drive.
I should have. I didn't see you when you came in. I'm gonna have to show you on the way out. I put a skeleton arm pointed hand on the side of my door.
You
on my
did
smart
not.
Car. I did.
God, you're badass.
On a smart car, which is
I
now,
love
now
it.
You guys know if you pass me in the that's me.
Honest question: is the arm most of the side of the car?
It takes up most of the side of the car, yes.
Great, good. That's what I expected.
Yes.
Okay, so we then cut to black.
So they drive into the sunset, essentially.
Yeah, basically. We come up on one of my favorite little dudes.
Yeah.
In the film, it's so we go back to the rotten fucking hellscape of the Citadel, just outside the Citadel, where all these people, and we get a better look at these people than we've gotten before, the inhabitants of the surrounding areas of the Citadel, who rely on the generosity and magnanimity of Immortan Joe, and they're broken. I mean, this is this casting call for basically people of all shapes and sizes who whose bodies are deformed in some way or look like the world has been sort of aggressive to them in certain ways. And we open on this guy who is lookout, basically looking out and seeing what's coming, sees the Giga Horse coming.
Right.
And is missing both his legs, has a sort of loose sarong around his waist, and a head covering.
Probably just because he didn't want, you know, George Miller didn't want to be showing dick right at the end of, I mean, realistically.
George Miller don't give a shit. George Miller shows some dick if he wants to.
George Miller shows some dick.
He could do that shit.
He could. He could do whatever he wants.
Yeah, but I think also it's practical. You don't want your nuts scraping on rocks, bruh.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, I got you.
Honestly,
I got you.
Do you want your nuts scraping on rocks?
No.
Do you want your soft tissues exposed to the sun?
But I bet there are people out there for whom that is a thing that they like.
Yeah, but these guys are just living. They're not trying to be exhibitionists. They don't want their junk exposed to the bright
sun. I like how they all come out of, like, holes. They've got these covers. I mean, it makes a lot of sense for the, you know, the climate, the terrain, you know, all that stuff.
It's practical. I think it's very, very practical. Also, along those same lines, basically your main enemy here, aside from starvation and drought, is the sun. The sun is your enemy.
Right.
Almost everyone in these scenes is carrying some sort of shade on their back. They carry their houses with them. Mm-hmm. They're like crabs or clams or something. They just they travel. Everything they own is attached to them. One guy has a wicker chair attached to his back, I saw, like a full-on wicker chair.
I would love to go back and see how many people are also, evidence says, carrying things that could trap water at any given moment.
I bet
they're on there.
Yeah, but there's people with sort of cowls and big, almost fan-looking things that are obviously sunshades, and probably serve a litany of other purposes that the design team has thought through that they could tell us for hours about it. But it all feels lived in, it feels practical, it feels very interesting, and there's hundreds of these people who are just coming out because something is happening.
Something's coming.
Their war leader, their warlord has gone out to recapture his booty, double entendre intended, and is coming back now.
And probably when he comes back victorious, he will celebrate by, you know, dropping water on them.
And so we see all these broken people come out, and then they drive up in the Giga Horse, which is battered and bruised and dusty. Mm-hmm. There's a white shrouded thing attached to its hood. Mm-hmm. They don't know who's driving. All the lookouts start to come out from above the top. The Citadel is covered with war boys, but war pups.
Well, war pups, yeah. A couple of guys in there. They're the guys on essentially the drawbridge. I love the shot of the Giga Horse coming up, and we see the Citadel. We get another good view of what's on top. It's, you know, these cranes and all the. Yeah. And I'd love to almost sort of freeze frame on that and sort of start to isolate the different things, because we don't get a lot of views of that throughout the film. We get a little bit here, a little bit there.
There's this beautiful tilting shot that goes from bottom to top of the Citadel, like sort of perfectly in a Wes Anderson framing, just bifurcated shot of the interior of the Citadel, the war part of it. Mm-hmm. Where on the left you have Corpus Colossus?
Corpus Colossum, Corpus Colossus.
Probably. Surrounded by war pups, and one of them
Quentin
is Manny.
Quentin
Kinahan. Mm-hmm. Wiz. One of the war pups is looking through, and as they pull up, he's reporting back to Corpus Colossum. Corpus Colossus?
Colossus?
Whatever the fuck.
Because I thought that was funny. Colossus, he's very tiny.
Yeah. And they pull up, and there's lots of buzzing, lots of crowd noise. And Max gets out and stands on top of the.
Well, they stop the drawbridge. Like they're letting it down because they're like, oh, it's Immortan Joe's car. Let's get down. And then something's wrong.
So
they stop.
Yeah.
Right. The two sort of sentries on the thing. One of the guy has one of those great, you know, sort of four barrel.
Sick.
Yeah. Sort of sick guns, and he's like, stop, and you know calls out to whoever's driving to come out.
Yeah. Show yourself. He doesn't say that, but that's...
But he says, essentially.
Show yourself.
You shall not pass.
The Gandalf character says.
I'd like to call it to, of course, the guy who's controlling the what are they called? The brakeman. Is, unless I'm mistaken, Greg Van Worsen.
Looking great, Greg.
Our lovely GVB.
Greg, you're looking great there, bro. Honestly.
Yeah.
Hit the gym.
So there are a bunch of logic things that start to come in here that I always grapple with.
Hit me.
One, they stop. Clearly, Max gets out. It's clearly not Immortan Joe. Now, they might not know who Max is, so there might be some confusion.
Yep.
But it's not Immortan Joe.
Sure.
Why don't they unload on him?
Here's what I think.
Okay.
Sorry, do you want to go one by one, or you want to just give me all the...
No, go ahead, because then it comes as it goes on.
Yeah.
It starts to mount up as to why would they not just shoot him in the face and start to pull the drawbridge.
I have a lot of thoughts on this.
Okay, great.
There are maybe, let's say, 20 non-Warpup people left guarding the Citadel at this point. There are maybe 2,000 people down there, obviously broken, obviously not super dangerous, but potentially emboldened or empowered.
Yeah.
And I think that these people are used to being given direct orders. They look for orders, none are forthcoming. Whoever's in charge, which I assume is Corpus Colossus.
Colossus at this point, probably,
I think
he's
probably in charge. He says nothing, and the camera cuts to him,
and
he says nothing.
Gobsmacked, yeah.
Which is basically to tell us that these guys now have to act on their own volition.
Right.
Given the way that they've been treated and the world in which they've been raised, which is one of obsequious attention to order and detail and command, I don't think without a direct order they're willing to make that call on their own, first of all. Second of all, if they do that, they may have a huge problem with this crowd if that crowd turns on them. So I think as these screws tighten and as this sort of ratchets up, it becomes more and more obvious that the crowd is on the side of Max and Furiosa, especially when Furiosa comes out, which we'll get to in a second.
Right.
But I think if this crowd turns on them, they're kind of fucked. We also don't know. There must be some reason why Immortan Joe keeps these people around. He could just let them die. He gives them water. He needs them for something, we have to assume. So I think that these sheer numbers here, and this is, I think, part of the metaphor of the end of the film, is that the power is returned to the people in a certain way, as exemplified by the closing shot we freezed on of giving water back to them.
Right.
I think the image here is the masses overturning the few. Mm-hmm. That's how I read that, anyway.
Great. Yeah. Although the bridge is still elevated.
Yep.
So those masses couldn't really get to them at this point.
Yep.
They've stopped. There's a...
But as we know from the comic book, and I think we can intuit here to some degree, those walls are scalable.
Right.
It's how Immortan Joe took over the Citadel in the first place. Mm-hmm. And I have to think that, like, there's this... All they need here is 2 minutes of indecision for this plan to work.
Sure.
And I think it's believable that these people are not independent thinkers and have some fear and confusion, and they just hesitate.
Right. They don't want to fuck up.
Yeah, it feels that
They don't know who Max is. I mean, maybe Max has sided with Immortan Joe.
I feel what you're saying, but this has always played fine to me in terms of logic. I'm just like,
It's never been a big deal for me.
Yeah. But it's always
something I think about, and I'd love to discuss it. Because then he pulls the shroud away, and we see, you know, Immortan Joe is clearly dead, and then he just dumps him on the ground. Now that, I totally get, like, if you've ever believed so much in one thing, you know, if you've believed in this god, and then you see the dead god, I can see how that would totally short out any sort of what's happening in your brain and make you, like, I don't think that at that point they would go, oh, I killed Immortan Joe, let's kill him. Like, I mean, because they never thought that Immortan Joe could die.
Yeah, his name is Immortan.
Right, and the vigor and the violence with which the crowd immediately goes to tear Immortan Joe's body.
One of my favorite moments of the film, honestly. Yeah.
We'll talk about it.
This huge Christian tradition of relics with saints and deities. If you've ever been to Italy, if you've ever spent time in Europe, every church has a splinter from the cross, a shin bone of Saint whoever, a vial of blood from Saint other guy, a shin bone or a finger bone. Sometimes full bodies. The idea of parts of saints becoming religious relics or important iconography for religious traditions has a long European tradition.
I once wrote a screenplay in which the relic was the holy penis of a saint,
and of
was
course
a,
you did.
was a fertility thing.
Was it called the dick relic?
I don't think it was ever termed the dick relic.
Do you want to? You can have that if you want.
I can.
Yeah.
Okay. Good. Because I might go back to that script.
The dick relic.
The dick relic.
Who's not going to read a script called
the dick relic?
Yeah.
Anyway, go ahead.
relics. I'm distracted.
You're a European relics.
Yeah.
I went to, have you ever been to, outside of Prague, the church at Kutnohora, the bone church?
No, I have not.
Glorious. It is.
How many bones are in it?
So many bones. Not of saints, but of people who had to be, you know, their graves had to be moved, and they moved it inside.
That's
to,
cool.
And the guy who, the monk at the church, who apparently was blind, rather than just sort of, you know, throwing them in a bin somewhere to save them, made them into sculptures of these human remains that are, it's glorious. You can look it up online, Kutnohora, it's Kutnahora, or just Bone Church, I'm sure it'll come up.
That's cool.
It is, and I shot a lot of video. I could not stop rolling
on
the bones. It was rolling the bone, roll damn bones.
Uh-huh.
It is glorious, but not saints. So let's go back to the saints element and that because it is articles of religious power in that way.
I do think that there's this nice, beautiful subversion of that image because in a way these people revere him and in a way they hate him.
Yeah.
And the bloodlust mixed with the joy of people holding the items as they run away.
Religious fervor. Yeah.
Yeah, it's religious fervor. Interspersed with a bit of hatred, and it's a beautiful subversion of this image of holding on to relics and bones of something you revered and admired for so long, interspersed with pure hatred. Mm-hmm. It's just a perfect image, and it does it all without dialogue, does it all without commentary. It's just a subversion of a classic traditional iconographic religious image, just perfectly done. It's so, I love it. It's when the first time I saw it, I was like, holy shit, that's smart. Like, it's so spot on in terms of what they've done here. And coming off the scene where Max is giving his blood to Furiosa, we're really tipping hard. And this movie straddles a lot of different iconographies and religious traditions, obviously, that we've discussed, from Greek to Roman to Valhalla to, you know, there's Norse stuff.
Yeah,
there's
Norse, like,
Christian,
yeah.
You know. But this is all feels very heavily Christian iconography to me, the giving of the blood, the lifeblood, sacrificial blood, to relics, to all this stuff feels very in my wheelhouse in terms of my degree of study and where we're raised.
Right.
Not you necessarily, but.
Not me.
You're as Jewish, you guys.
But I'm Jewish.
Can I say that now that Trump's president? Should I not say that anymore?
We have to. You have to.
Oh.
We could go down that road as to how I feel different these days than I did before.
Holy shit, right?
Yeah.
Guys.
But,
I'm sad again. I was getting amped about the film, and now I'm terrified for my friend Yuri.
I know. Don't worry. I got your back.
I got your back. I got yours. I'm a cisgendered white male.
Right.
I got you, bro.
Thank you.
Yeah. Raised Christian, if anyone's listening. So right. Don't come at me.
So don't put him on that list.
Don't come at me. I got light-colored eyes, you jerks.
Because I was raised Jewish, but because I'm also a writer and a storyteller and fascinated with reading and history and so on, being raised Jewish, I'm automatically obsessed with Christian mythology.
Sure. Yeah, yeah. I
get heaven and hell and angels and demons and all that stuff that we don't
you
have.
You got none of that. You got God, Eden.
We don't.
What a shitty thing.
Right. We don't even have hell in Judaism. And, you know, it's a whole other hierarchy and everything. And so I've always been fascinated with that. So I'm also, if not, you know, equally familiar, at least, you know,
you love
at
it.
Least at least there with you. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, I love that image. It's super great. Yeah.
It comes up in my writing all the time.
Great, no, great.
Which shows a clear level of obsession.
I don't want to jump ahead too far, but one of my other favorite images is coming up. I just want to flag that.
Okay.
You want to walk us through this next couple moments, and I'll jump in when my favorite moment comes up.
I wonder if it's my favorite moment too.
Oh my god. I hope so. Well, you go.
Okay. So they've dumped his body. It's torn apart. The guys don't know what to do. And during that pause, it is like you said, they go to Corpus Colossus and they're like, you know, what do we do? And he's like, he's shorted out. And it is the war pups that take control at that point.
That's my moment.
Okay. Okay, great.
Same?
Nope.
Okay, great. Well, let's back up a second before this happens, if I'm not mistaken, Max brings Furiosa out.
Yes.
And this is an important thing, too, where we as an audience don't know what's happened to Furiosa yet.
Correct.
We've just seen her looking real shitty, let's be honest.
Right.
No offense, right. Charlize, you look...
Terrible.
Terrible here. Not your best moment. Yeah. Arrested Development probably looked the cutest.
Oh,
Monster,
yeah.
Not the cutest. here even worse than the monster.
That's why she's great.
She's versatile. Doesn't mind looking ugly.
She doesn't care.
Doesn't look great. But we don't know what's happening. It left us on a cliffhanger. Max goes back in the Giga Horse and pulls out Furiosa, and she stumbles, broken and battered, to her feet, basically, on top of the Giga Horse. The crowd loves her.
Yeah.
Goes crazy.
Yeah.
And they start immediately chanting, let them up. Mm-hmm. Let them up. So the massive crowds are going crazy here. We also get shots through the eyepiece of the binoculars, the war pup still, mm-hmm. and then passes it over to Corpus Colossus of four mm-hmm. of the wives.
Right.
Are still there.
Yeah.
So that all happens, and then we get to this decision of who's going to let them up. Because the crowd is all in agreement, let them up, let them up, let them up.
Right. Here's something that's always, even the brakeman doesn't know what to do, and then he's sort of overpowered by the war pups, mm-hmm. who decide to throw the lever and drop the gate the rest of the way, or drop the bridge the rest of the way.
I wish I said lever.
Lever?
It's a more classy pronunciation.
Is it?
Lever.
Is it more British?
Yeah. It just sounds better.
Okay.
It's like a better way of saying it. I say lever and I hate myself.
Who's the skinny slave guy that's sort of attached to the lever?
Yeah, who is that guy?
Because you've got the brakeman who's going back and forth.
He's
and then
emaciated,
we cut back,
though,
and there's that emaciated guy who's clearly, he's... What is he doing there?
Hanging out.
Does the brakeman... He's the important guy, and he does it, and he's like, okay, now you hold on to it. I'm going to see what's going on.
And we'll talk to the milkmaids for a bit.
Yeah. You're just like a thing. Maybe he's like a doorstop in a way. And then...
I don't know. I clocked that, too, because I was like, that guy looks real skinny to be doing that job.
Yeah. And we've already established the person who's doing that job.
Yeah, you're right.
So and then the kids go over and they... Yeah, I don't know. That's always been confusing to me.
Yeah, I get that.
I'm sure the internet will tell us.
Internet, tell us.
And by the internet, I mean Mark Sexton. Yeah, will say,
Mark,
guys.
Who's that dude? What's he doing?
Yeah.
Let me just talk about that war pup moment for a second, because it's my other favorite moment in the sequence. Mm-hmm. There is a sense of what happens next. Mm-hmm. They've come back. They're few. The people manning the Citadel are still many. It's mm-hmm. as undefended as it will ever be. Mm-hmm. There are still a lot of them.
Yeah.
And there's also a sense of what happens next in terms of generational concepts. Mm-hmm. And the idea that it's the youth... The indoctrinated youths, Your Honor, who...
Very nice. Nicely done. See what you did there.
Uh-huh. Who are the ones who say, you don't know what to do right now. We do. Mm-hmm. We know what the right thing here is to do, is to let them up. Because the crowd says it. Everyone's in agreement. It's the first time the unification of a consensus between the masses and the elite.
And I never saw this before. We were just now, when we were just talking about it, those kids need a mom.
Yeah. Oh, great.
They need moms.
Oh, great.
And it's the women coming back and the kids.
Oh, I love that.
And it's just a primal that the kids responded to that. Mom's home.
Yeah, I love that. That's great. I hadn't thought about that.
I hadn't either until this very moment.
It's the next generation saying, you know what? It's going to be okay. We accept them. We accept them back. We accept the loss of a Morton Joe. Mm-hmm. We accept this new world. And it's the kids who throw the switch. And mm-hmm. I think that's... That resolves such a interesting dilemma in the film so cleverly. It just in one image, the kids pulling the lever. Mm-hmm.
Sounds good on you.
Thank you. It sounds good, right? I'm trying.
Totally.
When the kids pull that lever, it says to us, the audience, that...
Now you're just saying it over and
the
over.
The lever gets pulled by the children.
Okay.
It's important that the lever gets pulled. Because the lever...
Yes.
Is the metaphor of the new generation. They're the ones who flip the switch to say, we accept this new world, we accept this, we are now with you. Mm-hmm. And at that point, you know that the war's over. And I don't think that we really know the war's over until the kids pull the switch.
Yeah.
So I think that is the emotional ending of the film to me. Mm-hmm. Right there, that moment says it's going to be okay. Because when the war party comes back and gets through all that wreckage and comes home, they're going to come home to a very different world.
Right.
They're coming home to a very different thing. And we know that when those kids pull that lever, that when the war party comes back, it's going to be okay for Furiosa and the wives.
Right.
That's why I love it.
Great.
Keep going. You're going to get to your favorite thing.
You know how you have your favorite guy?
Oh, go on. Yeah.
My favorite little guy.
Oh, the Jamaican guy.
Yeah.
Talk
with the nose.
Uh-huh. And the teeth.
And the teeth. and everything. That guy gets arguably as much screen time in this film as Tom Hardy.
Yeah, yeah. Wouldn't you, though? It's a gorgeous
face.
It is.
It absolutely is.
It's striking. But I'll never forget it.
But yeah. But what is striking is how much we get to see it.
Yeah.
You know, so the gate comes down, or the elevator comes down, and it's they drive the Giga Horse on. But then, now, of course, all these, you know, people, the unwashed masses, start to also get on the, to, you know, some of whom are gonna go up to start this new world.
Which, importantly, is an image we've seen before. The last time this platform raised, they're kicking them in the face, they're pushing them off.
There's somebody literally gets thrown off. Yeah. Yeah. Somebody.
This time, they're being helped up.
Yeah.
Simple, great. Non-Trumpian metaphor of, right. We oppressed you before, now we're giving you a hand up.
Right.
It's simple, it's elegant, it's super, super smart.
Love it. But this one guy, Centers, who is he? Who is that actor? Who is that character? Who is he to George Miller?
Yeah.
Or what does he represent that he gets that much screen time? I'm not saying he doesn't deserve it.
He's a perfect face.
But it is very specific.
It is. It's very specific. He's a perfect face. And I don't know how to talk about this without sounding like an asshole. So I'm just going to say what I really feel, which is there's something...
We already think you're an asshole.
God
go
damn
ahead.
It, Yuri. You wrote a script called The Dick Relic. Who's the asshole? There's something gorgeous and hopeful and exciting to me about seeing what I don't know what else to call it, a broken face in pure bliss.
I got a broken face. Uh-huh, uh-huh, uh-huh.
Here is a professional voiceover artist, I should remind you.
And Pixie's listener.
Uh-huh. I hope that doesn't sound offensive to anybody, but there's this face that's distorted, and it's the nose is bulbous, and the teeth are fucked up, and there's this a beatific expression.
He's so happy.
It's looking up to the heavens with a look of hope and joy. Mm-hmm. And there's something about the contrast of those images and expectations to me. And I honestly don't know what this says about me, and I'm almost hesitant to say this, but it makes me so happy. It gives me so much hope. And I have to think that that's part of the image, and the reason that George Miller leans into it is that it's just this gorgeous fucking thing. It's beautiful. That's the best word for it. Seeing that face in pure bliss makes me happy. It makes me so happy.
Rising out of the morass, arising out of the
Did that sound offensive or something? I don't know.
No.
Okay.
No.
I don't know how to talk about it. I love it.
That's okay. That's why I wanted to bring it up. I just thought it was really interesting.
It's just gorgeous. I mean, that's the best word to me. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful image.
Yeah.
And, you know, quickly...
And it's not the last time we see. I mean, like,
no,
he still gets... Yeah. I mean, we focus on him throughout
the episode. But quickly overwhelmed to me by the beauty of seeing all the women helping up the masses onto the platform. Mm-hmm. It's our modern political system in a nutshell. It's do we stomp you down or do we give you a hand up?
Right.
And literally, they're giving them a hand up.
Literally.
Onto
right.
this rising platform.
Right.
It's the opposite of trickle-down economics, Yuri.
There you go.
So,
and then,
hashtag political.
Hashtag this episode is going to get us
political.
Killed.
Yeah.
And then, of course, we cut to this final frame of this segment of our show, which is the milkmaids in control, you know, the perfect people to be delivering the, you know,
liquids.
The liquids, the water to the life-giving liquids, you know, at the helm of just raining down water on everybody and, you know, giving all those people what they so desperately need.
So good.
Really
and
is.
Also, in a way, George Miller's sort of a master at this, of using plot to drive character developments and wrap up. So, of course, we got to wrap up the milkmaids. How do we do that? Well, they're the ones releasing the water, of course.
Right.
How do we wrap up
sense.
These guys? How do we do, you know? And so we're getting closure on every character in the film here, in service of the plot, though.
Let's take a second to see if there's anyone who hasn't been dealt with.
I thought through before I said that. I don't think there has been. I think everyone got their comeuppance, you know? Everyone
right.
Got their...
Where was... Oh, I've got one.
Okay.
The organic mechanic.
Oh, you're right.
Because wasn't he in the Giga Horse? Or am I wrong? He was definitely in there when he...
Yeah, I think he's...
You know,
but
maybe
he's
he
not
might...
There. He's not there later.
But we never saw where he went.
You're right. You nailed it. As always,
that's
Yuri,
the spinoff.
The organic mechanic. You're right. But most of the characters here have a nice arc closure.
Mm-hmm.
And having the milkmaids release the water is obviously the right image.
Mm-hmm.
It's the women giving lifeblood and life liquids back to the masses and giving them something they can survive on.
I would love to believe that the Organic Mechanic and Ms. Giddy run off together.
Oh, and do it, Nasty?
Sure. Start a whole new population.
That sounds like the plot of the Dick Relic.
And now it is.
God bless it. So guys, we have one more little wrap up episode.
Yeah, there's just a little bit. I know we've talked 45. About it before, but we'll talk about it some more when we hit it.
And we'll do so tune
in. And we'll do more stuff.
No doubt. Tune in next week for the closure of the film, mm-hmm. introduction to the credits, some wrap up thoughts from Yuri and I, mm-hmm. and then stay tuned for special future episodes, because I promise you this, listeners, there will be a full year on the Fury Road.
My name is Yuri Lowenthal.
My name is Travis Sintel.
And you are awaited.